The Kingdom of I, Chapter 7, The City of Productivity. Then I examined all my accomplishments that I had brought about by my own efforts, including the work that I had labored so hard to complete, and it was all pointless, like chasing after the wind. Ecclesiastes 2:11. Since the afternoon was far gone, the group decided to find a safe place to stay for the night. The road had slowly risen in elevation, and as they crested the top of the hill, they saw the gates of the City of Productivity looming before them. The man we met along the road, prior to passing by the City of Grumbleton, was from this City of Productivity, Stephen recalled. He seemed to be a reasonable fellow, so perhaps his city is not such a dangerous place. Why don't we stop here for the night? He suggested. The others nodded their agreement. They made their way into the city and found a hotel where they booked accommodations to stay overnight. As they sat in the dining room waiting for the evening meal, they struck up a conversation with a man at a nearby table. He was a traveling salesman named Mr. Deal, who often passed through the area. Timothy asked him what he knew about the City of Productivity. "Having traveled through this area for years, I have learned quite a bit about this city, as well as the neighboring towns. You may have noticed the town motto on the sign as you entered the city gates. It describes the mindset of the citizens here very well. I am valuable because I am productive." Mr. Deal lowered his voice as he continued, "Everyone who lives here worships an idol named Productivity. They are fiercely proud of their work ethic, and they slave away for long hours to produce something of value to offer at the altar of their idol. They teach their children their ways from as early as they can walk. If you watch carefully, you will notice that parents in Productivity reprimand their children harshly if they stop working to rest or to play. They are quite fervent in their belief that if a person isn't producing something, they are wasting precious time and are worthless to the community. And in their religious devotion of the idol of Productivity, wasting time is a mortal sin, equivalent to the sin of sloth." "That explains the serious countenance of nearly everyone we've encountered in this city. Not one person has so much as cracked a smile since we arrived," David observed. "It's true," Mary chimed in. "I smiled at a little boy we passed on the street, and he ducked behind his mother as if he was afraid to even return the smile." "Well, it is sad but true," Mr. Deal said as he shook his head. "But don't be offended at the poor children. They are trained to be serious from a very young age and punished if they act at all childlike or silly. It's sad, really. As far as I can see, a child can never be a child here in Productivity." "That sounds miserable, but it's not unlike our childhood in the City of Trepidation," Ray commented. Ben nodded and said, "That is true." "What about the neighboring town that we can see, just down the road, nestled up against the hillside? Do you know anything about that place?" Stephen asked. "Oh, yes, indeed," said Mr. Deal with a confident tone of voice. "That is a town called Busyville. The citizens of Busyville keep themselves busy day and night, running here and there, but never actually produce anything as a result of their incessant movement." He lowered his voice to a whisper, and after looking around to make sure no one was overhearing his words, he said, "For that reason, the citizens of Productivity despise them to the core." He continued, "The people living in Busyville feel both useful and important when they are busy, and they live under a deception that somehow all their activity yields something of value. But the truth is, they are comforting themselves with a lie. Their town motto is, 'A busy person is a fulfilled person.' But their neighbors here in Productivity see the lie for what it is because they measure every person's worth by what they produce. Since the population of Busyville never produces anything but tired citizens," chuckling at his own attempt at humor, "everyone from Productivity counts them as worthless." Mr. Deal leaned forward and said with a dramatic pause, "But the population of both Busyville and Productivity do share one thing in common." He sat there with an all-knowing look, waiting to be asked for the commonality he had observed. David politely asked the question Mr. Deal was waiting for. "What could Productivity and Busyville possibly have in common?" Mr. Deal smiled a triumphant smile and answered jubilantly, They both despise the dwellers of Slothville, of course. He announced this as if the conclusion should have been evident to everyone, but quickly observing the perplexed looks on the faces of those at the dining table, he continued to explain further. Slothville is a town which is located at the bottom of the next hill. Perhaps you have not yet passed by that place? The seekers shook their heads, so Mr. Deal continued his discourse. The citizens of Slothville are best known in this region for their intense aversion to work. Their town motto is, I don't have to do anything if I don't want to. And those people pride themselves on being able to do nothing whatsoever for longer periods of time than anyone else. And that is the only thing that they do well. The spirit of indolence pervades the atmosphere of Slothville and lulls its residents into a state of semi-stupor, leaving them with little motivation to do anything. And their children are twice as lazy as their parents. So you can imagine why the people from both Busyville and Productivity despise them, since they never do anything productive or even busy themselves with the simplest task. Their town is a mess because no one ever picks up the trash or cleans anything. I learned long ago to avoid that town completely because they never buy anything I'm selling and always want something for nothing. It's a place you would be well advised to avoid, for certain. Timothy interjected, Listening to your description of Slothville reminds me of something I read in the King's Book. He pulled out the old volume and found a place in Proverbs and began reading. Slothfulness casts one into a deep sleep, and the idle person shall suffer hunger. Mr. Deal clapped his hands and exclaimed, That's exactly right. In fact, those people in Slothville are always complaining that they are hungry and need other people to bring them food, but they won't lift a finger to help themselves, so even the food that they are given by the humanitarians goes to waste because they're too lazy to store it properly. The rats have a continual feast in that town. It's disgusting. Mr. Deal shuddered as he described it. Anyway, he added, what is that book you have in your hands that describes their condition so well? Before Timothy could answer, a line of waiters appeared, marching toward their table with trays of steaming bowls of soup and platters piled high with fresh baked loaves of bread. A collective sigh of relief spread across the table of weary travelers. Laughter and smiles were shared as the simple yet bounteous feast was laid before them. Mr. Deal moved over to their table, and they all feasted together, satisfying the hunger that had been gnawing at their bellies for the last hour. After they had eaten to their heart's content, Mr. Deal asked the question again, What is that book that you read from, Timothy? It was so accurate in describing the people of Slothville. It is the King's Book, Timothy answered. What king would that be? I haven't heard of any kings around these parts in the last century. Mr. Deal snickered at the absurdity of the idea. Stephen looked at Mr. Deal with a combination of seriousness and compassion. Have you never heard of the kingdom of I Am, or the king who is the one true God and the creator of this world? Stephen paused to allow his words to penetrate Mr. Deal's skeptical mind. Mr. Deal scoffed. Creator of this world? What nonsense are you talking about? We create our own realities by our own efforts. What old wives' tales have you been listening to? Stephen replied, You said that the words you heard from the king's book were accurate. That is because the book is full of the king's wisdom. He knows the hearts of people and all their failings, and his book describes the human condition, but also gives us wisdom needed to follow him and understand his kingdom. We are headed to the city of seekers so that we might receive instructions in how to pursue the king and go to live in his beautiful kingdom of I Am. After observing Stephen's passionate response, Mr. Deal dropped his disparaging tone and said, I'm sorry, I don't mean to offend. I respect whatever gets you through the night, but that philosophy is not for me. However, that book of yours interests me. As a salesman, I endeavor to study my potential clients, and obviously the author, Mr. King, or whoever he is, has insight into human nature. This could be of help to me in my work. I study people to figure out their weaknesses and their needs, so that I can find an angle by which to approach them to make a sale. So, how much money would you be willing to accept so that I may buy that book from you? Timothy responded swiftly and sharply as he drew the book close to his chest. This is a treasure to us. We would never sell it. Fine, fine, then just tell me where I might buy a copy for myself. We have no idea where you can buy the king's book. It was a gift given to us to help us on our journey. Perhaps if you become a seeker of the king, you too may be given this book as well, Stephen said with a twinkle in his eye. Mr. Deal stood up from the table and said, Well, perhaps I can find it in a bookstore somewhere, he said dismissively. Good evening to you all. And with a nod of his head toward the table of seekers, he turned to walk out of the dining room. Wait, Mr. Deal, before you go, I am curious about something, inquired Thomas. Mr. Deal stopped and pivoted to hear his question. You never told us what city you hail from, Thomas continued. Me? Why, I'm from the city of Mammon, of course, he said with a proud look. He turned again and continued toward the hotel lobby. Good night, he called out. Everyone at the table was quiet as they watched Mr. Deal walk away. As soon as he was out of sight, Timothy spoke. I knew there was something familiar about him. I should have known he was from my hometown, the city of Mammon. Just the way he spoke about wanting to find an angle to approach people so he could make a sale, that is all the people there think about and how to make money. Does not surprise me that he is not interested in hearing about the king or his kingdom. It is so true, said David. Though we never met him when we were living in Mammon, he seemed familiar to us too. His brother Thomas nodded in agreement. The group was sitting quietly when suddenly a familiar voice broke the silence. You will continue to discover that not everyone in the kingdom of Ai desires to seek the king. Most are too self-absorbed to be bothered. The group turned to see Andrew, the encourager, standing not far from their table. Andrew, they cried in unison. Please sit with us, Stephen encouraged. David jumped up to grab a chair from an adjacent table, and Andrew graciously accepted it. He pulled the chair close to their table and smiled. Well, my friends, you've learned many facts about the city and the neighboring towns. What is your conclusion? The group was pensive for a few moments before Thomas ventured a guess at what Andrew was looking for. It seems to me, Thomas said thoughtfully, that a person can be lazy, busy, or even very productive, and yet miss the truth about the world they live in. In fact, I think that those very things, though they are also different, can somehow hinder people from finding the truth. An excellent observation, Thomas. Anytime you worship something or someone other than the king, you will become deceived and blinded about your own life and the world in general, Andrew replied. Anyone else observe anything interesting during your time here? What struck me was Mr. Deal's negative response to hearing about the kingdom of I Am, Ben offered. I just can't understand it. I was so happy to hear about the king and his kingdom when I had that dream while living in the city of trepidation. And then my interest only increased when I met and talked to our fellow travelers about seeking the king together. Honestly, it shocked me that he was not the least bit interested in hearing about it. Yes, all he wanted to do was to get his hands on the king's book. Not to learn about the king, but to help himself make more money, Ray added with a tone of disgust. He wasn't even polite enough to hear what Stephen had to say without first mocking it. Even though we sat and listened to him talk on and on for so long, Mary pointed out. Mr. Deal and other self-centered people like him love to hear themselves talk and have no patience to listen to others unless they think it'll somehow benefit them. Selfishness is the root cause of all rude behavior, Andrew explained. Andrew then looked over at Ben and addressed the issue that he had brought up. When people like Mr. Deal feel self-assured because of a little financial success, they think they know everything they need to know. That is the reason he was not interested in hearing about the king or the kingdom of I Am. In their own minds, such people have the world figured out, and the idol they worship seems to be working for them. Mr. Deal worships the idol of Mammon. He and many of his fellow citizens feel quite smugly satisfied with that. But the day will come when the false god they have trusted in will fail them, and they will be ashamed. The king's book clearly speaks about it. This when it says, Those who trust in idols, who say to images, You are our gods, will be turned back in utter shame. That is definitely the difference between us, Ben replied. I was never happy worshiping the idol of fear, as we were all required to do in the city of trepidation. I hated it. And was sure there had to be something better than that for our lives. I'm so grateful that the king called to us in our dreams to seek him. Well, I have good news for all of you, Andrew said, turning back to the group with a smile. You are only 2 days away from the city of seekers. The group erupted in excited gasps. Murmurs of, "That is wonderful," and "How exciting," filled the dining room. Andrew's countenance turned more serious as he continued, "However, you will have to pass by 3 more cities before you arrive at the City of Seekers. I must warn you that the people of these cities will expend great effort to dissuade you from continuing your journey. The first city you will encounter is the very large city of Academia. It will take you a full day to walk from one end of it to the other. By the time you do so, it will be evening and you'll be required to lodge there overnight. You must be on guard because the Academians will present the most logical arguments you will ever hear against continuing on to the City of Seekers. If you thought the Grumbletonians were convincing, you have not heard anything that compares to what you'll encounter in Academia. They will appeal to the vanity of your intellect, and that is a dangerous and alluring strategy." The excitement of hearing they were so close to the City of Seekers all but evaporated as they listened to Andrew's warning about the City of Academia. "And the other cities you mentioned, what can you tell us about them?" asked Stephen. "The third city is equally dangerous to your journey, but in a completely different way. The name of that city is Sorcery. It is located on the main highway, several hours' journey past Academia. Many who have chosen to take up residence in Sorcery were drawn by the allure of power that the wizards who live there are able to display. They had no knowledge of what is written in the king's book about such things, so they don't know that they should have stayed. They didn't know that they should have stayed far from that place." "What is written in the king's book about sorcery?" Timothy asked, with a look of great concern on his face. "I have not come across it." "In the king's book, it lists the wicked practices of the people of the City of Sorcery and warns against partaking in any of it. It says, don't practice divination, sorcery, fortune-telling, witchery, casting spells, holding seances, or channeling with the dead. People who do these things are an abomination to God." "We don't want anything to do with such things," Ray said with great conviction. "I know people who ended up trapped in our hometown after attending one seance. They were gripped by the demon of fear and dragged to the City of Trepidation and have never escaped to this day. We won't let ourselves be fooled by any of their tricks. We'll just pass by the City of Sorcery as quickly as possible without stopping." Andrew gazed fondly at the youngest member of the group as he spoke. "I'm glad you're very determined to avoid the traps of the City of Sorcery," Andrew said to Ray. "But you need to understand that its citizens and the demonic forces that control that city operate with great cleverness and varied types of deception. For example, there have been people headed toward the City of Seekers who were waylaid by demons that strategically planted themselves along the highway, pretending to be seekers themselves. They would join themselves to groups of people walking toward the City of Seekers and tell of the wonders that they heard were happening in the City of Sorcery. They enthusiastically gushed with stories of power and magic and answers to questions given to them by divinely gifted mediums that changed their lives forever. Some gullible souls who had no understanding of the trap that awaited them in Sorcery went along with the demons, thinking they were fellow travelers searching for spiritual truth. Other seekers tried to warn them not to enter that city, but they could not be persuaded. As soon as they entered through the black iron gates of Sorcery, an unseen force quickly slammed the gates shut behind them with a powerful clang. They had not been heard from since." "We will be very watchful, Andrew. Thank you for explaining the dangers of that place," Ed meant. "Yes, thank you," the others murmured. "But what about the second city? You didn't mention anything about it," Stephen inquired. Andrew smiled. "You don't have to worry about the citizens of wealth and luxury trying to convince you to stay in their city. In fact, you'll find it quite the contrary with them, as they feel that few people are worthy of living within their city gates. They consider themselves superior to others because of their wealth. Living the most luxurious lifestyle possible is their continuous pursuit, and as a result, they fiercely protect their territory." "Yes," Thomas exclaimed with a sudden look of understanding on his face. "We knew people in the City of Mammon whose life goal was to accumulate enough money to move to the City of Wealth and Luxury. They talked about it constantly, but we didn't even know if such a place actually existed or they were just daydreaming." "The City of Wealth and Luxury certainly exists," Andrew assured Thomas, "and the pursuit of luxurious living consumes the thoughts of its residents day and night. They spend their time constantly upgrading their already sumptuous homes or simply acquiring a new one that's more palatial than the last. All of their acquisitions are focused on pleasing themselves, and they rarely think about anything else. Andrew pushed back his chair and stood to his feet. You need to get some rest. You have a long day's journey ahead of you tomorrow. Sleep well. And with that, Andrew walked out of the building and into the night.